I always tell people I'm not the same person who started podcasting. Mm. Like, if you know me from then, you don't know me. Like, that chick is dead. Yeah. Because it's expanding.
Yeah.
Every story has expanded me. Like, each and every story I've recorded. And it's expanded me to understand that my truth can sit comfortably across yours, even if they're different. Like, it doesn't mean now I take that as a challenge to convince you that my truth is the one that you need to come to, you know?
Yeah.
And I've recorded people who are extremely religious. I'm not. And I've not felt insecure or like, you know, I don't want to shove it down your throat like, ah, well, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a debate. That's your truth. And that's cool. This is mine.
We're that just group of people trying to move along the line. Maybe one day we'll get onto something. Until then, we say, hold on.
Salam and hello, everyone. My name is Lily Bakala Piper, and welcome to the show. So we are closing in on the end of season 3. And before I get into the episode today, I just ask one thing of you, dear, dear listeners. Please like, follow, share, and subscribe. It really helps the show. And as we're wrapping, it gives us a chance to also reflect on our growth. So if you've enjoyed the show this year, any show, any episode, please share it, like it, subscribe, make sure you're following so that when we do come back with new episodes, you'll see it. And finally, if you would give us a rating, a 5-star rating, let me be clear, not 4 or 3, a 5-star rating, that also really helps the show. Asante sana. So let me introduce my guest to you, which I am just thrilled to be talking to today. She is, I don't know, a force of nature, a force of light. I've had the joy of being in the audience at some of her events and just hearing her wisdom, her insights on business, on media, on life. And then recently I had a chance to finally meet her in person at an event for International Women's Day at the Australian High Commission. And let me tell you, Adele Onyango in person is even better than Adele Onyango on the mic or at an event. She is who she says she is. She is honest, she's authentic, she's joyful, she's accessible. I just was really amazed and impressed that a young woman who has such an incredible media company and following is also very personable and relatable and warm. And I am just so delighted that when we reached out to say, would you come on the show, she was enthusiastically willing to do so. If you don't know Adele's work, I don't know where you've been because she is a little bit of everywhere. She started her career, well, actually, she'll tell us a little bit more about where she started her career, but she spent many years in radio, and that's where many of us knew her, was her voice and her work at one of Kenya's top radio stations. Since then, though, she has been busy building what I really think is a media empire on the move, and an empire fueled by really honest and important conversations. Whether she is talking about women's health, whether she's talking about personal autonomy, financing, budgeting, content creation, her thoughts, her insights are well-earned and hard-earned. She has lived out a life where she has started things, she's stopped things, she's created impact. So let me give you some specifics about the ways that Adele has been present in the Kenya media landscape and really globally in the last few years. She has performed at the Moth in New York. And if you don't know the Moth main stage, it's an incredible storytelling platform where people come and tell very honest and transparent stories about a moment in their life. Adele's also a poet. So if you don't know her poetry, you should go to her website, adeleonyango.com, and check it out. She's got a tab full of a few poems. She needs more on there because it's just got a few, but some wonderful works that she's published. She's, of course, a former radio host. She's also the founder of Legally Clueless Africa. And that's really where I first got to know her work as a fellow podcaster, even though the podcast sits underneath this media empire that she's building. She's also the founder of the Adele Onyango Initiative, which we are going to talk about today and the incredible impact it's having for women and girls. Legally Clueless is a new media organization whose mission is really succinct and quite powerful. It is to amplify African stories, upskill Africans, and promote the wellness of our African community. If you work anywhere in media, you know that promoting our wellness is not usually top of mind for content creators or the creative industry. So the fact that it is for Adele really speaks to her intentions and her motivations for the work that she's doing. Legally Clueless became the first syndicated podcast in East Africa and now also plays on Trace FM every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Sorry, Trace Radio. When Legally Clueless got syndicated, it really felt like a win for the entire podcasting industry here in Kenya. At that time, I was still somewhat new, you know, maybe a couple dozen episodes in. But I remember thinking, if this can happen for Adele, she has really broken through a glass ceiling and she's making it more possible for the rest of us who are here also telling stories. And I could not be more proud that she has continued to pave a way for so many of us who are walking beside her and sometimes behind, but oftentimes beside her incredible work. Adele's work has been recognized in many different platforms. Her efforts to empower African women and youth have been celebrated as one of Facebook's 2019 Icons of Change, Africa Youth Awards 100 Most Influential, OK Africa's 100 Extraordinary African Women for 2018, and the BBC's 100 Inspirational and Innovative Women in the World for 2017. So that is just a bit about Adele Onyango, but we're going to get all into that and more. And first, let me just say thank you so much for being with us, Adele. So happy to have you here.
Thanks for having me and thanks for the kind words. Like, yeah. I was just like, oh my God, I hope I'm not blushing.
It's a very cute blush, in fact. It looks wonderful on you. And I have to say, before we started this conversation and we were just chatting a bit, I think one of the things that has always struck me about your style is your laugh, your warmth, your smile. Yeah. I love that that has continues to resonate with people, because I think when we think about media, at least legacy media, it's very
stiff.
Stiff is a word I was going to say, but I was like, and you have this really electric, unique style that I think really invites people in to
thank
talk with you. And so I'm just so glad that you're here today.
Thank you. And congrats for everything that you're building as well. Yeah.
Thank you. That's very kind. Thank you for that. All right. So I don't even know where to start because there are so many touch points in your career and your work. But maybe where we'll start is just with Legally Clueless, the media company. Mm-hmm. Tell us how long it's been around and how you got to this point of being a founder and not just being a content, you know, media personality rather. Mm.
So we turned 5 in March this year.
Congratulations.
Which is like a lot. And we've not had time to celebrate.
That's a good thing, I guess. So busy.
Anyone in business can share, like, yeah, it gets overwhelming sometimes. But we turned 5 and I started it primarily as a podcast in March 2019. And I was actually still on air on Kiss FM, which was the last radio station I worked at before I left Legacy Media. And I don't know if I should have been running a podcast parallel to my radio job, but I had already resigned, so I was serving my notice.
Yeah.
And I think I started it because when I resigned from Legacy Media, I was actually done with media. As you said, it's very stiff. Not only in like how they want you to present yourself,
right,
but on air, you don't have the space to even be a full human. You're right, almost like a talking head, right?
Yeah.
And you're there to sell.
Yeah.
You're selling music or you're selling products. Like, that's it. I was tired of the topics. My goodness. Because I realized with time, my then boss used to say, oh, as a journalist, you have to have an opinion on everything. And I always think about that now, because for a long time I thought, okay, something wrong with me, because I don't have an opinion on everything.
Right.
And there's many things that I don't think deserve my opinion, or I just don't care about, you know? And surely there should be space for that. And so I just got tired of that space. I'd been a radio presenter for 10 years. And so when I handed in my resignation in December, I thought I was like going off to like the development side of the world. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm done with you media people. You're crazy. On the side. And in January, my best friend sent me a podcast. I'd never listened to a podcast.
Really?
I had never listened to a podcast.
And here you are.
Never listened. Mm. And so he sent me this, like, he's like, oh, you should check this out, blah, blah. And when you resign, you do not want to touch your savings. Because I was just like, I don't know what tomorrow is going to look like. But I started reading and I came across like USB microphones. And I was like, ooh, first and foremost, I'm intrigued. Like, I just want to have them, you know?
Most people go after shoes, but you're like, that mic is sexy.
I was like, I want to see if this is real.
Yeah.
And I remember buying 2 USB microphones and a sound card still, because I just didn't believe. Because again, I'm coming from lumpy equipment.
Yeah.
And so I just didn't believe. I was just like, these websites, they're lying. And so when it came, I had changed my extra room in the apartment I was sharing with my partner at the time into an office that was going to be for my work of saving
your
the
NGO
world.
Work,
and then I was like, okay, you know what? Maybe one side can be like recording. I don't know what I'm going to record, but let's see. And so the mics came, my fundi was on time, which we know never ever happens. And then the only thing standing between me and starting the podcast was me. And so I remember calling that same friend, crying. I cry a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm like crying, like, what am I even doing? Who quits a breakfast show? Like, am I mad?
Yeah.
And he was like, record that. Like, tell people that. And so like episode one, I never go back to it. And it pains me every time, like in our back end, I see it's one of the top listened to. Because obviously when you find the podcast, that's where you start.
Yeah.
Because it's just 8 minutes. First of all, I thought 8 minutes was so long.
Because it's just you talking.
Talking, shaky voice, crying. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's how the name and the essence of the podcast came to me. And with time, I started having friends on. And then because of my work, I was traveling and meeting other Africans. And I started having conversations with everyday Africans with remarkable stories, and literally it just kind of gave birth to itself.
Yeah. Beautiful. I noticed this week was 271.
Yes.
Let me just touch you and say, well done. Well done. That is, that just tells us a story of consistency, determination, perseverance.
Every week.
I'm telling you, incredible. Incredible.
But I think we enjoy it. Obviously, the team has expanded. We have now a seasonal video series. We've gone on tours. Yeah. We have tour series, the wellness events and talks and stuff. But like I still love the podcasts, and even kind of like onboarding someone to help with the recording of the stories was so hard for me to do, because love that bit.
Yeah.
But I was like, Adele, for efficiency.
Yeah. But you know, you have such a unique style. I mean, most podcasts are what you and I are doing here, right? Someone on the mic, someone talking, back and forth. But you really allow your guests to tell their story, that there's space for them to explore their own thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I'm always tickled when I am listening and I hear somebody kind of come to an epiphany of their own.
Yes.
In the middle of their own story. So tell me how you conceptualize that approach.
I think it's because I hated how in legacy media, when you walked into the studio, I was deciding what's interesting about you, and then I was giving you 10 minutes max to tell me about it, you know. So it was a very, I've taken away that from you. And then later on, obviously at that time we were recording, we were interviewing mainly musicians, and like it was a very pop station, right? But I would hang out with them outside and get to know so much more, and I'd be like, I never knew this about you or that about you. And so I think I wanted people to have the space where they decide what's important. Yeah. So sometimes, even when I'm doing the recordings of the stories, I help you figure out what story. So even the pre is very limited. Like I'm like, I'm not feeding you the story. I help you come to the understanding of what story it is you want to share. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I've gone into recordings where I don't know the story I'm going to get. Like I have no idea, no overall theme. I'm just like, let's see where this goes, you know? And what I love about that, at first it feels like therapy. Like everybody comes out like, man, I didn't know that's why I do this or whatever. Which means, because I also studied psychology. So it means like at least that's coming into play.
You're using that degree.
Exactly. And so I love that bit. And I think for me, it comes from there. Of like, I don't want to decide for someone what's interesting about them. Mm. It comes from the notion that African stories have never been at the forefront.
Right.
And when they are, it's in a very undignified way, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I want you to be in control of your story. There's no one way to be African. There's no right way to be African. You are, and your story is valid as is. Yeah. And so literally anybody who fills out the storyteller form, we will get to you and we will record your story.
You speak about being African, that there's no right way. And you have roots outside of Kenya as well. You spent some time in Botswana and you're some secondary years.
Yeah.
I was trying to think formative. That was what I was trying to say. Formative years.
Yeah.
What did living in Botswana teach you about identity and whether it's you, Adele, as an individual or more broadly as a Pan-Africanist? Mm.
I feel like it was only 3 years, but it was so impactful, right? So that's where I discovered I loved poetry, because then I switched to an education system that was more conducive for my personality. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I still remember it being in English class and being told, oh, print out lyrics to your favorite song.
Yeah.
And then everybody had to come in and kind of present them as poetry. Cool. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. Yeah. Like poetry is not the boring stuff we can relate to, you know. That's when I realized I loved media, because my best friend then and I started a school magazine, and we used to just go and like print it and like staple it, like
I love it.
Shove it to everyone. And I enjoyed the process of interviewing people, right? But it also showed me that I'm Black.
Spoiler alert.
Huh? Yeah, like I feel like when you're Kenya at that time, or at least my experience then, I had interacted with people of different races, but like I think I wasn't quite aware of what comes with you're Black, right? And so I remember in Botswana, I used to swim competitively in Kenya, and it wasn't a thing. Like we would compete against schools that were from more affluent areas than I was. It was when you get in that pool, right. It's like,
it's you in the water.
Did you break the record not? Right. Yeah. And so when I went to Botswana first, I was the only Black person on the swimming team. And I remember being like, this is strange. Anyway. <Yeah. laughs> And when I remember walking into class, because I was maybe 2 weeks late, so the term had already started, and there were Black girls, Black boys, white girls, white boys, Indians, Chinese. And you kind of just feel yourself gravitating to what looks like you, right? But my best friend, ended up being a white girl, and then I got bullied by the Black girls for having... And then my next best friend, because this happens, right?
I was
next person. My next best friend was she was African from Botswana, but she had grown up in the States, so she couldn't speak the local language. And so she used to get bullied for that. And so I hadn't really escaped the bullying I'd gotten, because they were like, nah, she's still not Black enough, right? Yeah. And so it was just like, what's going on? And like when I'd win in swimming competitions, you were given like your awards at assembly, etc. And like all the Black kids are standing. And you know, the first time you're like, oh, this is so nice. Yeah. Second time. And third time you're just like, this is not about me or my swimming.
There's a subtext here.
And so it's like, just like that awareness of Black, like what music you listen to. Like if you happened to be African and you liked rock, that was so strange, right?
Yeah.
And so it was just like, you're learning all these things at 12, 13, and you come back and you're just like, you people never told me I'm Black, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it made me kind of understand and want to, because of trying to understand it, I had to understand the Southern African history, which was at the time, because I didn't know Kenya's history, I thought was so different from ours, right? And I was just like, what? Like, you guys really went through it. Because back home, we were not being taught what we went through.
Right.
And then over time, I think I've just been more inquisitive about what exactly is like the African story historically and what's the Kenyan story. And it's made me, the awareness is now good.
Absolutely.
You know, because now I'm like, there's nothing to be ashamed about.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Whatever flavor I bring to the definition of being African is like, it's dope. Mm. And so like, I don't shy away or tone down or participate in like respectability politics when it comes to like my heritage and the country I'm from. Like, no, I'm not going to do that.
And you see that in what you're curating on Legally Clueless, the podcast. I mean, the stories are very diverse, people from different places, different experiences. Why do you think people trust you when they come on the show?
Yeah.
Because you do get people to talk about pretty, at times, traumatic experiences, other times very relatable because, you know, kind of everyone's been through it, but someone's willing to talk about it. Mm. But there's definitely an intimacy that comes up in the conversation itself.
Mm.
Why do you think that is? Why do they trust you?
I think the first thing is just personality. I've always had people tell me a lot. Like where I'm just like, are you sure wanna?
I don't know. I know how this will end.
And I enjoy, so it's personality first. And I really enjoy small talk.
I'm one of those people who can sit and talk over a cup of tea for hours.
Oh my goodness.
You've gone to pick up something and next thing you know.
We were recently in Ethiopia and like we went to a club. So it was me and my best friend who happens to do our video. And like I went to the bathroom and I came back and I was like, that girl over there, did you know she's just like come from blah, blah, blah. And I met it and he's like, You went to the bathroom. Why have you come back with friends?
You did a whole for show in the bathroom.
Yeah, like I knew the company she works at, why she's in Addis. Like, does she want to come to Kenya? Yeah. Like, yeah. You know? And so I enjoy getting to know people. So it's just personality. And I get that some people, that's not their personality. And that's cool.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is like, I've never hidden any parts of my story, right? And so I feel like, if you want to create a safe space for people, this is not why I did it. I think I don't mind sharing the things that I've been through because I don't see shame, you know, around them. But if you want somebody to open up, it's hard to do that when you're not opening up yourself,
true.
And so I think that also plays a part. But more so, I think it's personality. And I genuinely enjoy getting to know people. And in the recordings, you don't hear my voice because that's how the podcast is structured and the video series. But I'm also contributing my experience. So you say something and I'm like, that's why I do A, B, C, D. And so it's very two-way traffic. It's not just one person sharing.
You said, or in the opening, I said about your company mission that part of it was to, let me read the statement again so I get it right, is to upskill Africans and promote the wellness of our African community. Did that value of wellness come out of this idea that you're not, you have shared so much of your story and some parts of your story have caused you pain? Did that inform how you then wanted to shape your company?
I think it's because of the impact of therapy on myself. And so I always think about how inaccessible it was. Like the first time I went to therapy was on my mom's dime. But you could still sense that this was something that is very expensive, you know? And it's like, we've gone out of our way. It's inconveniencing in that regard. And now when I'm the one paying for my therapy, I understand how expensive it is, right? I understand how having things like health insurance are, it's a luxury in our country, and even having a cover that covers therapy is also a further luxury. And so I want that to be accessible in cost and in like where it is, reach, and also in quality, right? I don't think when we talk about psychosocial interventions like therapy, etc., I don't think those should be tied to the church. So I want them to be accessible even in quality. So it's not like you're talking to your pastor who says, go pray. There's nothing wrong with prayer if you subscribe to that. But like, this is like, there's a science behind it. I want tools, like if they're apps, if they're, what do they call, grounding techniques that you can learn, or like small things that you can start learning about your childhood and how it's informing the way you move. So just knowledge, you know? Because when I learned them, I was just like, what? This is madness. Like, why was this kept away from me? And then kind of just the freedom that comes with understanding that there's nothing wrong with you. You went through some things that have made it harder for you to navigate. And once you're aware, now you can choose better. I want that for Africans, and even just understanding there are many communities in the African, different African societies who had wellness techniques and like routines, etc., but those were kind of yanked away and interrupted brutally. And so how do we, it's part of our strategy for the next 3 years, it's like, how do we tap into those as well and bring them to be more accessible? And for me, I just feel like wellness means freedom. Like, it's very sad for someone to be in a cage of based on the things they've experienced. Yet this life is limited, but it can also be a very big life, right? If you have the right tools to help you unlock yourself from like the prisons of what it is you went through.
That's really thoughtful and very specific way to think about a company and a culture that you want to create. It doesn't sound easy either.
It's difficult because like you're trying to bridge these two things that traditionally have been kept away from each other. Like when you're running a business, people look at businesses in a very robotic way, which I think is a weakness. I feel like if you bring in humanity to the business, it actually makes it stronger, because who are you serving? You're serving humans, not robots, right? And so how can you add value? And even with wellness, we look at it in three ways. We look at physical, financial, and then your mental wellness, because a lot of your mental wellness because of this capitalist environment, is pegged on your financial wellness.
Absolutely.
And so from end of last year into this year, we're looking at like, how do we make financial wellness information accessible and in a language that we understand and in a format that we're like, okay, tomorrow I can change A, B, C, D, right? Yeah. And then just kind of like how you arrive, for me, it's just been an awakening. Like how I arrive has changed because of the knowledge I gain in terms of wellness. And I want that for the community that we serve. And so when you come, it's not like, oh, only listen to the podcast, only consume this. Like, can you walk away, Fula? My goodness. Even if you choose not to watch the content or listen, can you walk away a fuller version of yourself? I think then we would have achieved something.
That's really extraordinary. It's just, I don't think that is what many people are trying to achieve in the media space.
Oh, yeah.
I think at the end of the day, we have to monetize. Yeah. You have to keep your show on. So your priorities become what can sell, what can travel. And so the fact that you're thinking about people's humanity as they consume your content is really quite disruptive and radical. Has that been, what's the response you're hearing to that approach? I mean, you have the initiative, which is very focused in its work.
Yeah.
But what response are you getting from people as they engage with you these last 5 years?
I think like our community is so strong. So I feel like sometimes you are tempted to go the route you're saying, like where it's like bottom line, like what's going to travel further in terms of like new media products, right? But I think what happens is that, yes, you then get people who interact with it, but it's not deep and they move on, right?
Absolutely.
For us, we have such an engaged, deep community who sometimes will even celebrate adverts on the podcast. Like, I always found that so interesting. I'm just like, you're celebrating because they have...
They understand.
They've taken ownership of the space. We've found that we've been able to even attract the male audience with our other wellness tools and wellness spaces. And with our workshops, because we train other African creators on how to build what it is we're building, again, you're kind of like trying to instill that you don't have to go this other route. You can be more intentional. Mm. And so our community is very like, deeply rooted, you know? And so sometimes when I interact with different people, it's just like, deep, like I'll have a deep conversation with someone. I'm like, this is so wonderful. Like, okay, we're doing something, guys, keep going. And I think even our numbers and like those kind of traditional ways to track activity, they speak for themselves. And it's because there's a value, right? Yeah. Yeah. And it's not only, I find like the legacy media approach, and I always did when I was on legacy media, it's so extractive.
Mm.
So I'm just extracting value from you. And I'm trying to think, what's the minimum effort I need to extract value from you?
Right.
And we never think about, okay, what value are we giving back? Sure. Yeah. And so I feel like it's a harder approach, but it gives you a firmer standing as a business. Yeah.
It's something that I resonate with, excuse me, very deeply with in terms of the ideology of it, the practicality of it feels hard. That's where I guess the hard question comes out my question around, is it hard? Because if I look at what we're trying to do at Salam and Hello, for example, we're going to take a pause in a few weeks. Primarily it's because we don't have the money. I've run out of savings.
Yeah.
You know? So you have to pause. So there's this idea of, okay, what can you do that you can commercialize? Mm-hmm. And then what can you do that is genuinely your values, you know, generally who you want to be in the world and how you want people to feel.
Yeah.
So in your training, when you're training these other African creatives, you know, how do you address that kind of tension between staying afloat and staying alive and being true to who you are, you know?
I feel like you always look at it like, my last resort is to like fully charge the community.
Right.
So I will look for any other partner who can subsidize that, right? And so how we've done it in the past is that we partner with organizations and we come in and we train people. That's our longest running partnership.
Okay.
But even when we make it open to the public, which we've done last year, August, we did like a whole week long podcast masterclass. We partnered with an organization who subsidized the cost.
For you to do it.
For me to do it.
Right.
And so that the community then, yes, there was a fee attached, but it wasn't inaccessible,
right?
And so for me, it's always to look at that. It's always to look at different forms of advertising, which is why it's important to build the value pockets so that you can have people advertising on different products, right?
Right.
To look at, can you make money from a distribution platform, which mm-hmm. we've been able to do so. So we partnered with iHeartRadio, and then it's almost like passive income because right. that product was going to go out anyways, exactly. right? So can yeah. it just make money as it sits there? And then how can the business make money on its own commodities that kind of keep the community engaged? And with that, when it comes to our wellness talks and like our group therapy sessions, we partner with people who are like-minded. So the venues and all of these things. So it's not profit driven, but it's still what I've found, it still makes a profit because yeah. there's a value. You know right. what I mean?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I am a businesswoman. And so I do understand that I'm not going to run on a loss because I don't have the luxury of running on a loss.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you start expanding, and I think sometimes what happens is we expand our content products that are very intensive. You have to put in money for production instead of kind of like layering it. So you expand the product, but bring something else that you can run a bit more easily. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really struck by your really smart business savvy, because even if we take it outside of media to just any industry, most businesses fail within mm-hmm. 2 years. I mm-hmm. think that the data is quite stark, and
yeah.
entrepreneurship is necessity, especially in Kenya and the continent. We have to create our own opportunities, and yet
yeah.
the risk is not insignificant. So well done to you, because you
Thank
have managed
you.
To be true to yourself and run a successful business, which I think is
yeah.
that's the sweet spot. If we can do that and provide incredible value to your followers, your listeners, your people who come to your events.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to know, as you think about, you know, this journey that you've had, particularly with the podcast where you've had 271 episodes, so many people you've talked to, what have your guests taught you that maybe you didn't know about yourself, the media, the industry, life, Africa, whatever?
Yeah.
You know, what have they given to your life?
I always tell people I'm not the same person who started podcasting. Mm. Like, if you know me from then, you don't know me. Like, that chick is dead.
Yeah.
Because it's expanding.
Yeah.
Every story has expanded me, like each and every story I've recorded. And it's expanded me to understand that my truth can sit comfortably across yours, even if they're different. Like, it doesn't mean... Now I take that as a challenge to convince you that my truth is the one that you need to come to, you know?
Yeah.
And I've recorded people who are extremely religious. I'm not. And I've not felt insecure or like, you know, I don't want to shove it down your throat like, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a debate. That's your truth. And that's cool. This is mine.
I want to talk about something that you shared recently on your social media that I thought was really moving.
Yeah.
You said that this Mother's Day was the first Mother's Day where you could feel grateful.
Yeah.
And you told a really beautiful story about some neighbors who have meant a lot to you.
Yeah.
So in case people missed that post, could you tell us a little bit about why
goodness.
This Mother's Day felt grateful for you?
So my mom passed away in March 2012. And she was my best friend. Mm-hmm. Like, the relationship wasn't your typical...
Yeah.
Like scared of your mom. I told my mom the craziest of things, like very open relationship, we'd kind of crossed over to friendship, right? And so it was very painful. I mean, it still is very painful. And it's something that I try and navigate every day. It presents mm-hmm. itself differently.
Mm-hmm.
Grief changes your identity. I'm still trying to grasp all of the changes, because mm-hmm. some of them you don't even know exist until something happens and you're like, whoo,
yeah.
this is mm-hmm. destabilizing. And so Mother's Day, I kind of would always have like a lump in my throat. There are Mother's Days where as early as like April, March, I'm unsubscribing from stores that send me stuff to my email, because of course they're going to be sending Mother's Day sales. And I'm like, I don't want to hear it. You guys and your mom stay outside. I want to hear it. The world has been horrible to me, you know? Or like, I would stay off social media because people are posting their moms. I would have resentment if people don't check up on me on Mother's Day. And
carry.
I'm just like... You don't know, this is difficult, you know, which is in therapy, again, you have not communicated your needs, people are not in your head. And so it would just be like, you never know what emotion is going to pop up on Mother's Day. And so, you know, where I moved, my neighbors are a mother and daughter duo, and they're just so cool, right? And the mom is in her 60s, the daughter is in her 40s. And so we'll hang out and just like, talk about life. And you know, she's taught me so much about farming, the mom, and she's gone through so many similar things to my mom. And when we initially met, she had just lost her mom. And so we bonded around that. And I think that was the beginning of the friendship. And so when I moved, like when I'd be down or have sad days, it's almost like I'm very like ancestrally tethered. She would appear at my door and be like, oh, I brought you avocados, I brought you bananas, I brought you this. And I'd just be like, it's like she knows there are cameras in the house.
She's still mothering you.
Exactly. Mm. And so so Mother's Day, she and her daughter invited me to spend the day with them. Mm. And it was the first time this had happened. And when they did, I realized, oh, this is what I've always wanted. I didn't know, you know? And then it's Saturday, because Mother's Day was Sunday. It's Saturday and I'm like working the house and I realize, wait, people are meant to buy things on Mother's Day.
Where are those promotions?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what do I get? Yeah. I was freaking out. And it was kind of like the first time since the last Mother's Day I spent with my mom that, you know, I bought flowers and bought a card and was in that section of Mother's Day paraphernalia in shops, you know? And so, and I felt so warm and so happy. And it was like such a nice feeling, you know? And I think it's also because this year I've just been learning that community shows up in very different ways. And there's always people around you to love you. Yeah. And I remember a session with my therapist some time back where I was just like, nobody loves me, nobody cares. You know how you go there, you're just complaining. Yeah. And she's like, you need to restructure that sentence and speak about who is it who you feel doesn't love you. Because when you say nobody, you're discounting the ones who are there and you have community showing up. And I think I'm just learning that there's so much love around you. Mm. It just may not look like what you've been conventionally taught love looks like.
Just that's such a beautiful way to think of it. Sometimes love is avocados.
And she brought me some last night, like four. I haven't even finished the others. I was just like, oh, bless her.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I, having just heard you, hearing you talk about your grief from afar as a listener, I was really brought into that. So I was so glad you shared it.
Yeah.
I think sometimes our identity can get stuck by an experience that we've had. And so I think for people who have walked in with you, like me from a distance, to hear this moment, I shared in your joy.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you shared it because I think it's so important for us to share also when our grief looks different today.
Yeah.
You know, grief looks like, you know, lunch with neighbors today, you know?
Exactly.
You were, so if we project ahead, we've kind of looked back at that, Adele, and then, you know, and you're continuing to just grow and work and build all these communities. Do you have a vision for the Adele that you want to be in 5 years' time?
Worried at just group of people trying to move along the line. Maybe one day we'll get onto something. Until then, we say, hold on. I know it's hard, but baby, you just got to hold on. I know it's hard, but baby, you just got to hold on.